Well, last week I asked a number of questions about what temples have we constructed that have taken center stage in our life. I asked, what have we come to revere, to adore, to venerate, and to love? And what have we come to devote our lives to? We discovered that in the cleansing of the temple, Jesus was revealing himself as the new focus of worship. The invitation was to turn over those temples in your life. Turn over that personal cluster of things that were getting in your way from focusing on Jesus. Well, this week, by this video, I'm inviting us to look at a particular person. He's supposed to be learned, who comes to Jesus with the best of intentions to sort out who this rabbi is, who this teacher is. But if you read the passage, he's rightly challenged. Yep. We got Nicodemus there. We'll hold him for a bit. Now, as background, you need to know that when Jesus was born and where he grew up and he spent his ministry, he was amongst people who knew the scriptures by memory, who debated its application with enthusiasm and gusto, and who loved God with all their hearts, all their souls, and all their might. We have a view of the Pharisees might be just not too popular, but we have to recognize that they lived with zeal and they loved their God with all their heart and all their soul and all their might. Now, we're going to go to the list. Keep going. Right here. At 5 years old, both boys and girls would begin to be taught the scriptures and they would memorize them, because there weren't that many books around. At 10 years of old, the children would be taught what would be called oral Torah. And this would be the interpretations of this memorization by which they had already been given. They would have been told that this rabbi had said this, this teacher has said that, and they were beginning to memorize what other people had said. Then at 13, they would then move on to the commandments. This is where it gets serious. And how we were to fulfill the commandments. That's where the number 613 comes from. And then at 15, they would then be receiving instruction on the Talmud and rabbinic interpretations. And the Talmud is not the Torah or the Old Testament. It is the commentary. It is the things that people would write about and interpret. So at 15, they would then get this lesson. Now at 18, interest turns to the bridal chamber. Could I get a snicker on that, please? Okay. Now at 20, we're expecting that the young men in particular are pursuing a vocation, but the best students in their studies, in their learning, would continue to study, but with a rabbi on a personal basis, one-on-one. And then in 30, if you have been studying all along with a rabbi, you were kind of expected around 30 to begin to instruct others. Now, if you know your Sunday school lessons about the boy Jesus, at 12, going to the temple, about going into ministry at 30, you can begin to say, hey, I think those kind of match up. We'll go to the next slide. Now, the word rabbi, we have associated it strictly with a religious connotation, but you have to understand that in the Hebrew culture and society at that time, that the Torah, the law, which we call the Old Testament, was everything. And therefore, a great teacher was a teacher of the Torah. And the word Torah means great one or master. So what did the disciples call Jesus? Rabbi. What did the lawyers that came to see him call him? Rabbi. What did the ordinary people call him? Rabbi. What did the rich who came to him? Rabbi. What did the Pharisees call him? Rabbi. What did the Sadducees, the people who ran the temple, what did they call him? Rabbi. Great one. Master. Jesus truly fit the description of first century rabbi. But he was at the advanced level, where disciples would seek to follow him. Those with, watch this pronunciation, shmicka, which means one with authority. Jesus had this shmicka, one with authority. Now Jesus, we make these assumptions, told parables. Well, actually, all the rabbis told parables. And then if you remember some of your Sunday school and Bible study training, that Jesus would sort of say certain things and that you would have to go through the commentaries or talk to somebody and find out, actually, that's just the beginning of a psalm, and we're supposed to understand that there's a second part to what he's saying. This was a style of teaching, because the assumption is that the people listening knew their Bible, knew their Torah. So Jesus seems to be a type of rabbi believed to have the shmicka, this authority to actually interpret the scriptures. You see, most rabbis, the teachers of the Torah, would only teach accepted interpretations. They would say what other rabbis had said, or what was safe within their community or their synagogue to say. They wouldn't venture off. Now, those with the shmicka, or authority, would make new interpretations and pass legal judgments. Now, we know from Matthew, and this is after the great Sermon on the Mount, the crowd says that this Jesus taught with authority, not as the Torah teachers. Yes, he had the shmicka, this ability to interpret and go beyond what others would have been told. We're going to go back to Nicodemus. Now, Nicodemus lived a life as a Pharisee. He centered his life around the letter of the law, all 613 of them. His whole life had been devoted to ritualistic purity. Nicodemus was a member also of the Sanhedrin. These are the people that controlled the temple. So he would be expected to be learned. Now, the Pharisees thought by obeying these 613 laws, God would bless their nation, and they would return to a theocracy, and the Romans would be gone. Everything would be fine. So the Pharisees were obeying these laws with an expectation that everyone else would too. That's where the rub comes. They were rubbing against society and the community. Now, every T had to be crossed and every I dotted. But Nicodemus, from our passage in the Bible, was possibly beginning to wonder if Jesus, in the cleansing of the temple, stories had come out about this miracle of the wedding at Cana, and then his authoritative teaching, it was beginning to get suspicious. Was this the long-awaited Messiah? Now, Nicodemus' early response to Jesus, remember from your Sunday school and everything else, where Jesus talks about being born again? Well, it appears when Nicodemus responded to him, he seemed to have a limited imagination. Where Jesus says, unless a person is born from above, it's not possible to see what I'm pointing to, God's kingdom. And this learned man says, how can anyone be born who has already been born and grown up? You can't enter into your mother's womb and be born again. What are you saying about this born again talk? Jesus says, you're not listening. Let me say it again. Unless a person submits to this original creation, the wind hovering over the water creation, the invisible moving the visible, a baptism into a new life, it's not possible to enter God's kingdom. When you look at a baby, it's just that, a body you can look at and touch. But the person who takes shape within it is formed by something you can't see and touch, the spirit, and becomes a living spirit. If this man was supposed to be so learned, why didn't he draw on Ezekiel? Where God says, I will give you a new heart, I will put a new spirit in you, I'll remove the stone heart from your body and replace it with a heart that's God's will, not self-will. I'll put my spirit in you and make it possible for you to do what I tell you and live by my commandments. Let's read this together. With one voice, let us say, I'll give you a new heart, put a new spirit in you, I'll remove the stone heart from your body and replace it with a heart that's God's will, not self-will. I'll put my spirit in you and make it possible for you to do what I tell you and live by my commandments. Okay. He goes to Jesus, trying to figure out if he's the Messiah. And we have a theological lesson taking place. We are going deeper and deeper and deeper into what Jesus is about. Jesus does what he so often has come to be known for, of meeting people where they're at. And he talks to them about things that they can understand and relate to the context in which they live. In this section, Jesus is talking theology, an interpretation of scriptures. He's at that shmikah level, saying, Nicodemus, come up to this level, come up to this level, understand this. Plus, in telling the stories that we're just going to take a peek at, Jesus goes one step further and fully gives a revelation of who he is and God's intentions. For the Pharisee standing in his midst, Jesus went back to the Old Testament book of Numbers to relate a story of God's rescue and then would equate it to his own impending death. This is the shmikah teacher saying, I'm up here, Nicodemus, come on up. I want you to understand this. No one has ever gone into the presence of God except the one who came down from that presence, the Son of Man. In the same way that Moses lifted up the serpent into the desert so people could have something to see and then believe, it is necessary for the Son of Man to be lifted up, and everyone who looks up to him, trusting and expectant, will gain a real life, eternal life. Jesus helps Nicodemus to understand that when it comes to being right about God, it all depends on the power of God. Than on a pious men and women keeping a bunch of rules just right. You see, Jesus helps Nicodemus to see that life and death depend upon God and his provision. You see, all the Israelites could do about those poisonous snakes that the story in Numbers is about, when the snakes were all over the place, and he lifted up a cross, he lifted up a pole, and people were to gaze to it, and they would be safe. It was by God's provision that they were safe. Jesus would also be lifted up on a pole as a sacrifice to save people. And for those of us who look to him, on that cross, we too are safe. Dallas Willard, a famous theologian, has noted that the message of the gospel is one that leads us towards a heart to have rather than a bunch of rules to follow. So he's saying it's a heart that we have that leads to salvation rather than a bunch of rules. But here's the big point. This passage about Nicodemus has that famous John 3:16 in it. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. The full passage is, this is how much God loved the world. He gave his Son, his one and only Son. And this is why, so that no one need be destroyed. By believing in him, everyone can have a whole and lasting life. God didn't go into all this trouble sending his Son merely to point an accusing finger, telling the world how bad it is. He came to help, to put the world right again. Anyone who trusts in him is acquitted. Anyone who refuses to trust in him has long since been under the death sentence without knowing it. And why? Because of that person's failure to believe in the one-of-a-kind Son of God when introduced to him. As I mentioned just right in a few minutes ago, Jesus goes out of his way to speak to people so that they could understand. And he also goes to people and he speaks to them in the relationship to the context of their life. And Jesus also goes to us and reveals himself to us. For Nicodemus, this rabbi, this learned man, he said, I'm bringing you up to understand. I'm bringing you up to understand. And by the writing of these scriptures from John, you are all invited to come up to that level, to fully understand who Jesus is and what God's purpose is. Open your hearts. Open your minds to Jesus Christ. Turn your eyes towards him. Spend time with him as your rabbi and teacher. Start reading the Gospels. Listen very carefully as he speaks to you. Because he's going to speak to you in the context of your everyday life. And don't limit God to 613 rules. And don't limit God in your life. Don't limit him. Let God speak to you and let God reveal himself to you. Let God come to you. And as we take communion this morning, recognize that we are symbolizing the body and blood of Christ. And the invitation is to take that and eat it. Take that wine and drink it and bring Jesus into you completely. Do not limit God. And in the communion, let him speak to you. Let him speak to you now.